Good morning. Welcome back.
Monday.
This is the I Am Sorry About Last Night podcast. I am Tom. Part of the www.socialpodcastnetwork.com. Check out all of our podcasts, locals, podcasting locally. Podcast is also brought to you a little bit by The Nook. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner here at Painter's Mill. Just off Cape Neck Road. Check them out. Amazing, amazing food. Look for the tent. What's going on? How's everybody? How'd we do this weekend? Everybody all right? Good, bad, ugly? I don't know. We made it. Mondays are my favorite days of the week. I don't know why. I do not know why. Weekends are a lot. Weekends are a lot. A lot of inconvenience for a guy like myself. A lot of inconvenience. Kids, cleaning, chores, you know, just shit. I lived so long for the weekend, I always thought weekends were the most important days. And turns out, at 52, I like Monday. Not a big fan of Friday. I love Mondays, I love Wednesdays. Weekends aren't always my favorite. I put so much into them, and they always fall short. Same with my, you know, Mondays and Wednesdays are my day off. I tend to put a lot into those days. Do you do that? Fantasize about what it's going to be like that day when that day shows up, how amazing it's going to be. If I could just get through this shit and get to that day, which is going to be the day of all amazingness. Then that day shows up and it usually falls short. Falls short a lot. And it's not that it's falling short and it's not that it's a great day. It's just I put so much on it. I make it the savior of the week. I mean, that's kind of what we're taught, right? You're going to have to work, man, but believe me, you're going to really enjoy these other things that we give you. They're called days off. Those are the good days. Working days are the bad days. Where are you going? I got to go to work. But I'm off this weekend. But at 52, I think differently now. And, you know, don't get me wrong. I mean, I worked Saturday. At the end of the day, I was like, I'm glad I'm off tomorrow, which was Sunday. But, you know, at 52, I'm learning that it's important for me to work. It's like the key to this mysterious happiness that I have, that I don't recognize, I don't identify with. It's just a state of mind of being happy, and it's due to working. And some of these times where I put these so much onto my day off, they fall short, and then I end up feeling not only did I not work that day, but all that I had planned for fell short. So it sometimes even turns out to be a crummier day than a day of working. It's like reverse psychology, right? Wait a minute. Days off are supposed to be the great days. Someone wrote a comment or something on the Instagram page about suffering and how important it is. And it's crazy because it's fun. I love to meet people or to talk to people or to have conversations with people about this topic, about the actual what we would think would be what we want and really how what we think we want is really not great for us. It's not great for me. Like the idea of retiring. I mean, as we've grown up all our lives, oh, I can't wait till I can retire. Retire. You know, we put this whole thing like, oh, you know, this is something we earned. No, we're getting put out to pasture because we just can't hang with the younger people anymore. It's not a reward. Retirement is not a reward. Somebody sees how we really are, because unfortunately, a lot of the times we can't see it. You know, my dad, he was 82. He's like, I could build, you know, we were talking about building a deck. We don't want a deck, but he's like, I could come over here and build this. I'm like, no, you can't. But in his mind, he thinks he can. Retirement is not a reward. The trick is trying to figure out how you feel, how to feel like you're retired in a young age, but still working. Meaning, like, you know, good old boy Matt used to say, find something you love, you'll never work a day of your life. I feel like I retired fucking 15 years ago. I mean, my job is the best job ever. I'm sure there's some people that would disagree. That's fine. They might be right. But for a guy like me, it's perfect. I have just enough of a small business that I kind of get to live the small business life and understand, but it is so small that I'm not dealing in giant big numbers. I'm dealing in smaller small business numbers. Something that a guy like me can handle. I'm lucky. Fucking lucky ducky. You know, I always tell my kids, what you get out is what you put in. Or what you put in is what you put out. Or what you get out. Or whatever it is. But meaning, if you want something, it's going to require something. If you want mediocrity, if you want basic, you know, simple, neutral, you know, not a lot to it kind of lifestyle, then you put, you know, that's about all it requires. If you want to be a doctor or a lawyer or something like that, which is not the greatest thing for me, but for those people that want to be at that level, it requires that level amount of work. I didn't put a lot of work into my life. I'm a self-centered asshole with a deficiency in humility. That's my problem. That was my problem before I even found alcohol. Problem before I found women. Problem before I found drugs. It's a me, me, me. And a me, me, me life doesn't require a lot of work. And I didn't put any work into it. I took the path of least resistance. And that path, you know, involved my parents, teachers, all these people that felt bad for me. Oh, disability, learning disability, adopted, whatever it was. And a guy like me at that age, I'm like, I'll take the help, sure. I'm sorry. I won't do it again. I was such a shithead. I've said this before. You come to that path, that fork in the road where you should either do what you're supposed to do or do what I want to do. I've always taken the path of what I wanted to do. Make me happy. Are you that way now? Do we hide it better now? I think I do. I think I hide it better. I recognize it today. I recognize it today. But it's still around. Still self. I hide it better. Camouflage it. I don't even know. I mean, I went through a giant portion of my life not even really knowing who I was. I've always been influenced by other people. I'm never the guy that stands alone. Look at me. I am confident in who I am. Nope. I had to fucking hang out with people. I needed to be liked by people. I've just never been that guy that was that confident in my life. I always say I got introduced to drugs and alcohol, not because I was interested in drugs and alcohol, but I was interested in the person that was introducing me to be, for him to be interested in me. You get that? That was a little messy. I was more interested in this person liking me and me doing whatever I had to do for that to happen than I was being interested in getting high. I remember the first time I drank, I had a couple sips, I rolled around. I've shared this before. The first time I used something chasing to get a high, my buddy Danny said, let's try, see if your parents have any pills in their cabinet. We looked, we found pills, we took them. I don't even know what they were. Probably Premarin, probably fucking some bullshit from my mom's, you know, lack of estrogen or some fucked up thing. But we took them, and I remember rolling around on the ground like I was high. Look at me, Danny, I'm high. Like me, like me. I remember drinking with a friend of mine from when I was in 10th grade and not drinking, sealing the tip of the bottle up with my lips and then acting like I drank and then rolling around on the ground and acting like I was drunk. I was always more concerned about what other people thought of me. I never liked the taste of alcohol. I never liked any of it, really. But it comes at you little bits at a time. If you'd have talked to the guy March 30th, 1997, and sat down with him, he would have probably been perfectly content with where he was. Sitting there, drinking in a one-bedroom apartment, really trying to figure out how the fuck did I even get there, right? I mean, this isn't the guy that in eighth grade had visions of his life. How did I get here? It's awful. About that, you know, that period of my life, I had no fucking clue who I am. I've said I was a chameleon. I'd shape and shift my way and configure my way that everybody would like me for every situation. Trying to score drugs, trying to score beer, trying to score some chicks, whatever it was. I don't know who Tom was. And the fucked up part about it, really, is the Tom that I've turned into is not that fun. I mean, I have a good time. My wife complains, you're too AA. Too sober. Can you be too sober? She's right. You have to give and take. And unfortunately for me, to get sober, to understand what it is about me that might send me into that right turn in the liquor store, I've had to take a really hard look at it. And I feel like I've really taken the fun out of everything. Like you see people laughing. Are you really laughing? Or are you just appeasing other people? How many times do you do that? Do you do that? Do you laugh at something that isn't really funny, but it's just kind of what we do? Oh, that's funny. But inside you're like, that's not really that funny. Or Or you go, oh my God, are you okay? When you know, and most of the time they don't give a shit. They don't care if you're okay. But it's what we do, right? We appease and... I don't know if we care how a person's feeling or do we care how we look. So what's happened is a lot of times I don't laugh. I'm like, it ain't that funny. I'm not really laughing. And I'm not that sad and I'm not that concerned. I feel like I've just taken all the bullshit out. You know, it's funny. My dad will come over and I'll talk to him and we don't laugh. You know, he's not very happy. I mean, he's happy, but, you know, we just don't laugh. We just don't have a good chuckle. But my wife comes home and him and her, they giggle and laugh all night. Right? Because my wife is like, oh, you know, she is, you know, she loves it. She loves to be concerned and to laugh and to care. And they have a great time chatting and laughing and stuff. And then I get into it and I, you know, do the fake laughs and stuff. But it's weird. I just feel like I've overanalyzed myself. I've called out all my bullshit. So now my wife says, you don't show emotions. And I'm like, maybe I don't. I don't? Oh, no. What if I broke my emotions? But I feel like I've just seen it all and heard it all. I've become cynical. I feel like everything and everyone's full of shit. Like everybody's out for something. This COVID has really exposed, you know, a lot of people, it seems like, are just kind of holding on by their fingernails to not lose it. You know, pre-COVID, it was easy to be kind of phony and fake and laugh at people and be folksy. But the COVID took the folksy right out of everything. Sobriety took the folksy right out of me. Sometimes I'll sit and watch television and something funny will happen and I just don't find it funny. It's like I broke my laugher. You know, I started hanging out with my buddy Carlos. He's fucking sarcastic as hell. He's you know, he is that guy. He's that guy. He's how I was. You know, at the end of my addiction, I was sarcastic. I was cruel. You know, I made jokes at other people's expense. I just was, it was bad. And when I got sober, my buddy Scott's like, you know, I've shared this before. I said something to him and he got his feelings all fucking hurt. Can't believe you said that, really hurt my feelings. Like, sorry. I wasn't concerned with people's feelings and I was sober. I was free from the drink and I was fucking hurting people's feelings. And I remember I felt about an inch small and I swore to my God, I'll never do that again. I'm sorry. It was a real eye opener. But it seemed like if I'm going to be real honest and be truthful about a lot of this stuff, I started realizing that I laugh at a lot of stuff and I'm not really, it's not really funny. It's just these habits. I don't know. It's insanity. But I'm sober, right? I'm sober, thank God. I don't know. Has anybody experienced that? Is sobriety taking the fun out of everything? Well, and so to get back to Carlos, you know, Carlos isn't, you know, he aggravates. And so to hang with a guy like that, you got to kind of get back into it. You got to stir the shit, right? You got to be sarcastic and be kind of mean, but funny. Funny at their expense. But we don't do that in the program. We're not. And I told him I spent 25 years trying to change the shit, and here you come. And I love Carlos. He's like my 52-year-old eighth grade friend. You know, I listen to my son chat with his friends, and they're just constant. My son's just always laughing. He has this laugh that only makes these little crackle sounds when he's deep into it. I'm like, what's he doing? And he's laughing. I miss those days of laughing in eighth grade. So meeting Carlos, and I'm like, this is so much fun. But it goes against everything programmed, right? Hurting people's feelings, being considerate of others, making amends. And this guy, we do a podcast called In Too Deep. It's a Pearl Jam podcast if you ever want to check it out. But we had this band Black Circle on. These guys from Brazil, they're a Pearl Jam tribute band, but they just released their new album, and they're working with the EB Foundation, Jill and Eddie Vedder, that are, you know, doing EB research, which is a skin disorder that affects children. And we're trying to raise money and get it fixed. But these guys called me and they said, we want to come on your podcast, our Pearl Jam podcast, because they want to talk about the event, which is Wednesday, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, 7 p.m. on Nugs TV this Wednesday. We want to talk to you about the event. I was like, absolutely. So, you know, because that podcast is real. I mean, it's ours, but, you know, Carlos, it's kind of his baby. So I sent, you know, I let Carlos know, and Carlos reached out to the band in Brazil, and we ended up having him on. But, you know, Carlos and I have this shtick, you know, and it's kind of a sarcastic, kind of abusive kind of shtick that we have. And, but it's what our relationship has evolved, because Carlos being sarcastic and, you know, crazy, you know, it's been fun to kind of get back into that mix with him. And so we kind of, you know, Carlos was saying something. Carlos, I forget what he was saying, but he was saying something. And I'm like, and here you are podcasting, you know, like, I should have been this and I should have been that. But, and I'm like, but the reality is, this is what you do now. You're podcasting. And Lenny from the band goes, Tom, you're such a bully. And I thought, oh, wait a minute. I'm not a bully. But it sounded a little bullyish. It sounded a little mean. And I'm like, Carlos, you need to tell Lenny, you know, I'm not a bully. This is just our shtick. We bust each other's balls like this. And of course, yeah, and it was funny, and it's exactly what we do. But then I had this feeling like, you know, that wasn't that long ago where you were like that. And this program and this the way of life and being sober and the people around you have taught you that being sarcastic and hurtful to others, it does hurt people's feelings. And it actually affects people's feelings that are even around the situation. So I felt bad. I feel like calling Lenny in Brazil and saying, I'm not a bully. I'm a nice guy. But the reality is that I can be... I think I'm more of a bully who works on not being a bully than a guy that isn't a bully that had to work on trying to be a bully. Like, if I revert back to old behavior, I'm kind of like a bully, sarcastic, picking on people with words. That's how I was when I was in my addiction. Just wasn't very nice. I wasn't thinking of others. I was only thinking of myself. So I talked to Carlos about it, and I said, listen, I don't want to be the bully. I don't want to be the mean guy. You're not. It was a joke. He was having fun. We were having fun. He understands. And I know, but, you know, it just made me feel a little dirty. So, listen, I had to make an amends. I don't know who to make this amends to. I'm sorry. Lenny, if you're listening, sorry that you felt I was being a bully. You might be right. I wasn't trying to be. I thought we were just having fun. But shit pops up like that, man. I got it all together. I got it all figured out. I'm sober. Been doing this a long time. And then shit like this pops in and you're like, ooh, gross. I don't know if I spend, if it costs me more effort to be the person that I'm not. Or if it takes more effort to be the person that I am. You know, a lot of that insecurity, you know, being mean to other people, being sarcastic, but a lot of that just comes from how I feel about myself. you know, Carlos will tell you he was the class clown. You know, Carlos will also tell you that he didn't fit in. So Carlos's remedy for not fitting in is being the funny guy that people recognize. I mean, it's a classic case, right? We've all seen it. Maybe we've even done it. I think I was even the class clown because, you know, I wasn't the athlete. I wasn't the best looking guy. I had to find my spot. I had to find my position. And believe it or not, I was the class clown. And class clowning means sarcasm, picking on people, making fun of other people to make yourself feel better. And I was gross with that when I came into the program. I mean, it was bad. And having situations like I did with my buddy Scott that points it out. And I, you know, I've always said nothing changes a life like shame and guilt. And when Scott pointed out to me how mean I was by saying that simple little comment, I was full of shame and I decided I would never do that again. I also said, not no. He said that, you know, he pointed that out and I felt like an idiot. And I said, I'll never do that again. I don't know who I am. Am I just a sarcastic guy that's still that 10-year-old kid that doesn't fit in, that wants to be recognized? Or am I a 52-year-old man that doesn't particularly care what other people think of me? And I think the latter is probably more of the person that I am. But unfortunately, that guy, in his not caring what other people think of me, has forgotten how to laugh and be part of an emotional conversation. I don't know. It's crazy. I didn't sign up for this. So I guess the moral to the story is it's fun to have a friend like Carlos that allows me to be sarcastic and mean and have fun and goof and be one of the guys, one of the group. Because sobriety and AA has isolated me a bit. And it's worth it because what I get from being sober outweighs what I got from not being sober by 100,000. But some of the things that I've lost is that ability to laugh at everything and to be, I don't know if the right word is a safe place, but, you know, if you want to come and have someone laugh at everything you say, I'm not the guy. My wife is great, you know. She's so, one of the first things that I loved about her when we met is, you know, I would say something, she goes, that happens sometimes. Happens sometimes, right? I'm like, yeah, it does. But she was very, you know, positive. That's okay. It happens sometimes. Yeah, I guess it does. She's a good balance for me. Oh, shit. Should we read? Do you care? Do you care if I read? I'm going to read. I listened to myself the other day. I couldn't even read that shit. I'm so stupid. I apologize. Like I said, don't go find this on your own. Go see what you can find because this is some great reading. Daily Reflections. Reflections of the way. Okay, here we go. November 16th, a daily reprieve. Here we go. Sounds like something I've heard. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. On the maintenance of us surrendering, but that's neither here nor there. Let's see. Maintaining my spiritual condition is like working out every day, planning for the marathon, swimming laps, jogging. It's staying in a good shape spiritually, and that requires prayer and meditation right there. That requires prayer and meditation. That requires surrendering. The single most important way for me to improve my conscious contact with the higher power is to pray and meditate. I am as powerless over alcohol as I am to turn my back the waves of the sea. No human force had the power to overcome my alcoholism. Now I am able to breathe the air of joy, happiness, and wisdom. I have the power to love and react to events around me with the eyes of a faith in things that are not readily apparent. My daily reprieve means that no matter how difficult or painful the things appear today, I can draw on the power of the program to stay liberated from my cunning, baffling, and powerless. My cunning, baffling, and powerful illness. Yep. Take it for what you want on that one. But my take is, you know, you need to stay humble. You need to surrender that shit. Turn it over. Pray. Reach out. Talk about it. If you don't do that kind of, if I don't do that stuff, like I woke up this morning and I'm like, I'm open to it. Let's talk. Let's, you know, if I go 2 days, I'm like, maybe I don't want to talk about it. 3 days, the new voice is starting. You don't really have anything important to say. Fourth day, it's really important. You do not say a thing. Like these weird voices. Work on it every day. I have to keep talking. I have to keep sharing. I have to keep putting it out there. I have to keep not caring what other people think about me. Keep not caring. I guess that's what they're saying. Have a great day. Someone find salvation.